The next matter on for oral argument this morning is Delahunt v. Mitchell. As you're organizing yourselves, I will just remind you of our rules. Each side will have 15 minutes to present your argument with an additional 5 minutes to appellant's counsel. If you'd like to use that time for rebuttal, please state your name as you commence each leg of your argument because we keep track of the argument with our audio recording of the proceedings. The time restrictions are indicated in the podium. There's a light and a clock. There's also a button in front if you'd like to raise or lower the lectern to match your height. Council, we are aware that there is a pending motion to strike, and so council may choose or to address that during oral argument or not. It's up to you. We do have the written submission, you can treat that issue however you like. Council for appellant, whenever you're ready to proceed, you may.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Christopher Zawiski on behalf of the appellant, Tammy Mitchell, in this matter. We are appearing here today on an appeal from an order dated September 10th, that divided a pension, a military retirement pay. And I may accidentally say pension throughout this. I tend to do that when I'm looking at this. And denied attorney fees on the issue that we were requesting them on, the appellant was requesting. I think just a brief summary of some of the facts that the parties agree on. I think there's an agreement that the parties' date of valuation was August 24th, 2006 in this matter. The court found that. They found that there were because of the way that the pension was apportioned and valued, they found that there were 108 months of marriage, over 240 months of service total. That, I don't think, is a disagreement. We know the date of retirement of my client, which is October 1st, 2016, which leads to the bottom half of that fraction. And we know some other things. We know, in essence, the times in which the parties were in front of the district court and this issue wasn't raised. We know that there was a 10-year gap between the property settlement of the parties in 2008 and the motion, asking then to divide that same military retirement pay. So we know all of these things, and yet we have what we feel is a significant error in the fraction and in the apportionment of the military retirement pay by the district court. In essence, because we agree on almost all of the factors, looking at, you know, the fraction that's required, that it's 50% of the marital value, the only thing that's really necessary here was the value of the military retirement pay on August 24th, 2006. That's where the rub of this case lies. And to the extent that my client believes that because of the language of the stipulated property settlement, which says that the parties shall divide 50-50 the marital portion of the military retirement pay, we believe that that needed to be valued on August 24th, 2006. And that was part of the court record. That number is $1,173. I think it's $1,172.90 or something like that.
What, that number? That is what? Yeah. The marital portion?
That would be her pay at the time based on her rank.
That, whenever someone uses the word that, I never quite clear what you're referring to. So,
I guess I don't understand the question.
When you said that, what?
Oh, that her pay, her military retirement pay, would have been $1,172.90 or $1,173, $1,173 on the date, August 24th, 2006. That was part of the record. It's in an affidavit from Captain Crane that was attached to my client's May 25th, 2018 affidavit. It's Exhibit N, and it's page 125 in the record of that affidavit. So, in essence, what the district court then did is made a number of findings. Said it needed to find out three things. And those three things resulted in the date of valuation. These are the things she said she needed to find. The date of valuation, the size of the marital portion of the retirement pay, and the formula and calculation. The date of valuation she found was the ICMC date, and that was what was being argued, August 24, 2006. She did approximately 8 to 9 findings, 41, I think, through 49, on what the value of the marital portion was, but never then comes up with a number. But says that she has decided, and I believe it is finding number 48 or 49, she says, now that we have found the marital portion, the marital value portion, she then goes on to the third thing, which is the formula she has to use. And the problem then becomes under finding 54, she states the value is uncertain and there's an ambiguity. Now this leads to a number of problems, because what ends up happening because of her finding of an ambiguity there, even though in finding 41, she finds that there is no ambiguity as to the value, that it's the marital portion, in essence, date of valuation back to date of marriage. She then says, nope, I can't figure that out, and that requires me then to go down and use the Janssen formula, which is where this problem lies. And again, the Janssen formula uses the same fraction and the same 50% of the marital value, but then she inputs what my client's military retirement pay at retirement was. In essence, using the value she created from 2006 to when she retired, her non-marital effort. Now there's two parts.
So what are we left with? Dispute about the size of the marital portion?
Correct. And so there are two parts to this. When you use that Janssen formula, what you're doing is two things. You're using the effort of the party, which is the fraction. In this case, it's 108 months over 240 months, versus, or the second part rather, the value that's earned. So in this case, what was in front of the court is that you had a value that increased because they used her last 3 years of employment, 2013 to 2016, which created a higher number, $3,900 as her retirement, military retirement pay, rather than the $1,173 that was a present at the time of the dissolution or the date of valuation. Now, there's a couple things that work here. In essence, if you look back, if there's an ambiguity and you look back to the date of marriage or the date of valuation, rather, there is discussions between the parties, and this was also part of the record, which is that the attorney for the respondent here at the time indicated this very thing, the formula that we're asking for, with an understanding that it was the value at the time. And this, the reason this is important is because, in essence, that's the argument that was used in Gugisberg, which is cited throughout the brief, and basically recognizes that you have a situation in that case where the formula is already decided. And as we've said, I think we agree on the formula here, but the value was the problem. And when Gugisberg, and it is an unpublished case, but it can still be used for persuasion purposes. When you look at the Gugisberg case, it basically recognizes the fact that you can't take the non-marital value, because what you're doing then is awarding something that is not part of the marital property, and you're changing the marital property settlement that's already been decided. Now, on a side note, there is a issue raised here as part of the district court's order as to whether you can use the 2017 version, amended version of the U.S. Code on this issue. It's an interesting question if the district court comes back and says we can't use that version because we have a 2008 property settlement that is final, but then says it's ambiguous. To the extent that if you're going to have one or the other, and this is the problem throughout most of the order, is that you're picking and choosing the date you want to use, either 2006 date of valuation or 2018 hearing date. And you're going back and you're saying, look, at everything at 2006 is what I'm looking at, but then I'm going to use the 2018 number that I find for her retirement, military retirement pay now. What we're arguing is that you have to use the military retirement pay that's set at the date of valuation. And if it's ambiguous, I think the district court is incorrect. Because again, there was evidence provided that showed his attorney at the time and the argument that the parties were having over the value. That value included the same apportionment we're now asking for.
Why was there an agreement to decide all this into the future if all of this was set at the time of the original?
They were arguing over other factors. And if one looks at that email or letter from, I believe it was Peter Watson, who was an attorney, family law attorney, to Nancy Berg, who were the two attorneys on the dissolution case at the time, there was a stipulated offer, and it laid out that formula. And then there were other factors within that stipulation that there were disagreements on. So nothing ever got done. To the extent what they did was put a placeholder in, that placeholder is clear. There's no ambiguity to that language. It's 50% of the marital portion. That's not ambiguous.
So they just couldn't agree on the marital portion at that time, and so kicked it down the road, or what?
Well, no, they actually, within this settlement negotiations that they were having, and again, there was no finding by the district court on this stuff. There was no finding as to whether it was appropriate to put it in. There was no finding as to whether it, you know, under the parole evidence rule, whether it was appropriate. None of these things. But it was provided and presumably part of the record since there's not a finding saying it wasn't. That says this is the value. It's 108 over the 240, assuming that she has to complete 20 years of service, because if she doesn't complete her 20 years of service in the military, she gets nothing, and he gets nothing. So that's one factor, and as I pointed out in the non-marital calculation, that's an important factor. But then there is also a reference to the fact that she was a major at a certain level, and that should be the pay. Now, again, that's important because if you go to Gugisberg, that's exactly what they found, that you can determine, and all of these things are determinable. They were determinable then, and they are determinable now. The reason that that's happening in 2000, that this case is happening in 2018, is because there was an obligation by one party to do the order to get this done, and it wasn't done. So, and that goes theoretically to my, you know, last argument on attorney fees when we were arguing about whether or not, and the district court said there was no need for attorney fees here, arguing over whether or not this delay caused problems. It definitely did. I mean, we're arguing now over a 2016 value when she went into pay status on her retirement pay in 2018 at a hearing, as opposed to the 2006 date of valuation, 50% marital portion. Those numbers were available to the court, and she should have, in my opinion, put those numbers into the formula that she used. We wouldn't be here now. Now, I think the other issue, too, is if you look at that, and you say the Gugisberg case has some sway here, because I think it is. It's the interesting thing about it is the facts line up almost exactly on this case. There was a delay in getting it done. There was a formula that was agreed upon. There was a value that wasn't present. And the district court in that case used the higher value again, his payment after 25 years of military service, and took that number, and when it came up to the Court of Appeals said, no, that's not appropriate. We have to send back. We're going to reverse and remand and use the value that was at the date of marriage, date of valuation in that case. That's exactly the same fact pattern here. So the difference that opposing attorney will most likely argue is that in the judgment decree of Gugisberg, the formula was set out. And there was also some language regarding how you would calculate. However, again, I refer this court back to...
You would calculate what?
How to calculate the value.
Okay.
using his rank at the time, using the pay status he had received for the 3 years prior to that. Now, I would again point this court then back to the discussions the parties had, which recognize all of those same issues and should have informed the district court as to then how you plug those numbers into the formula. In essence, the key here is that you have a decision by a district court 10 years after a stipulated property settlement that uses the non-marital effort and increased earnings of my client to then reward the person who waited 10 years to do the order. Unless there's any questions, I have nothing further.
Thank you. You will have 5 minutes of rebuttal time if you choose to use it. Counsel for respondent.
May it please the court. My name is Kathleen E. Rustler O'Connor, and I am here today representing Thomas Dillhunt, the respondent in the court and in this court, and the petitioner below. Thomas Dillhunt respectfully requests that the court affirm the district court's decision for four reasons. First, the district court had both personal and subject matter jurisdiction. Subject matter jurisdiction, which was challenged by the appellant, was conferred upon the Minnesota court based on the Uniform Services Former Spouses Protection Act, codified at 10 U.S.C. 1408, sub C 1, and the stipulation of the parties. Appellant Mitchell consented to personal jurisdiction within the meaning of 10 U.S.C. 1408 C 4 by her answer and counterpetition requesting that the court divide the real and personal property of the parties and also the stipulation of the parties. Second, the district court properly applied Janssen to calculate the marital portion of appellant Mitchell's military retired pay that was partially non-marital. Janssen, as a formula, is used when there is a unvested, unmatured pension, which is what existed in terms of a retirement pay in 2006. What the court did then was awarded Respondent Dillhunt one half of the calculated marital portion that she used Janssen to calculate of the based on the stipulation of the parties. The fact that appellant Mitchell needed to use a hypothetical pay formula when counsel for appellant says that the court knew what the retired pay was, what the number that they are referring to, the 1173, is actually a hypothetical pay formula that was not in effect in 2006 nor in 2008.
So, and I understand a hypothetical pay formula is the language, you know, that's been
yes,
used.
Your Honor.
But it seems to me that the argument I'm hearing, and maybe I have it wrong, is that it is really the pay as of the valuation date.
So
I realize that's hypothetical and one worse, you know, use of that word, but it is a, you know, it's a number that regularly we get numbers stated in terms of their value at a particular period of time. That's regularly done in the law.
Right. And the issue the court was faced with, the district court was faced with, was that that formula using the hypothetical pay formula was not something that was available and required in 2008. It was instead an unknown at that point in time. So essentially the district court looked at this matter as if she were sitting there in 2008 as of the judgment and decree and looking at the facts before her and saying, we have a unvested, unmatured pension, AKA military retired pay, and by reason of that, I am going to apply Janssen because if we use the calculation that appellant advocates, where she takes the hypothetical pay as of 2006, but then reduces it by the Janssen formula that accounts for the entire pay, she is essentially double discounting for the non-marital. The 2017 hypothetical pay formula that is currently in use does factor in the pay at grade in at the time of dissolution, the years at grade, and then sets that number and adjusts it with cost of living to the date of retirement. So basically, that number remains intact as Appellant Mitchell calculated throughout her brief in six different sections. She stated that the marital portion of the military retired pay after adjusting for cost of living was $1,402.90. She then wants to take that number that is set as of 2006 and reduce it by a fraction of 108 over 240. The issue before your honors is whether or not you use Janssen to the whole period of time or whether you use Janssen to reduce a number that already corrects for the non-marital time. So if we use a hypothetical pay number, Your Honor, we do not ever have to look to the 240 months. That is the fallacy of the appellant's argument. They cite the Guggensburg case. The Guggensburg case does not stand for the position that that is the correct formula. The Guggensburg case stands for the fact that the wife in the Guggensburg case, who was the former spouse and subject to the protections of the Uniformed Services Former Spouses Protection Act, did not appeal the judgment and decree. The judgment and decree had this double discount formula. The district court that then looked at it when the Department of Financial and Accounting Services rejected their judgment and decree, looked at it in setting the orders, said, this is a double deduction. We are applying the current value, we are reducing the current value by the entire time period, and therefore the number that is the formula set forth in the original judgment and decree is incorrect. She was reversed because the original decree was very specific, contained a formula that is not in the Dillahunt Mitchell decree, and that formula was so specific that the appellate court said, no, we cannot go back. The property settlement is final. Since the property settlement is final, you are bound by the judgment and decree because you did not appeal it. The Guggensburg case had spelled out Jansenizing the one half of the marital. That is not the case here. The Dillahunt Mitchell stipulation specifies that Mr. Dillahunt would be awarded one half of the marital portion. Throughout the appellant's argument,
In that stipulation, there was no description as to how you would calculate a non-marital portion.
No, Your Honor, the marital portion was not specified. With respect to what value the court came up with, the court needed to either apply Janssen or not apply Janssen. It does not work, and it creates an unjust and unfair and inequitable resolution to have a double discount. So either Janssen applies to the full amount or there is no Jansenizing of the marital portion.
And your view is?
My view is, Your Honor, that the district court properly applied Janssen in this case because Janssen was the formula that was being used. It was what was suggested to the court by Tom Hughes, an expert in pension and military retired pay division, saying that when he indicated that there was the hypothetical pay formula did not exist at the time of the judgment and decree, and that the court should use the formulas that were before the court at that time.
That time being 2006.
2008 was the date of the dissolution, Your Honor. Your Honor indicated that we should respond briefly with...
I think Jansen involves in a double calculation.
Jansen, when applied to the full amount, adjusts for the non-marital portion. But if you apply Jansen to a hypothetical pay that's calculated as of a date certain, at that point, there is a double reduction because we've already isolated this value for the non-marital and found a marital portion. In fact, in six different sections, she calls the marital portion 14-12-90. But then what she says is that marital portion needs to be reduced by her full time of service, even though we have already reduced it. For guidance, I would direct the court to the current formula in 2007 U.S. Uniform Services Former Spouses Protection Act 1408 that specifies that they are to use the member's retired pay base and years of service on the date of dissolution increased by the cost of living until retirement. There is no reduction in that formula for any time served after that in the service. With respect to the new issues that were raised and were the product of our motion to strike, appellant's counsel spent quite a bit of time talking about new issues that were raised. Specifically, she raised the new issue that a couple different issues. She raised the new facts in the form of two single pages taken out of context relating to the conversations between the attorneys relating to any formula before the stipulation was ever entered into. Those were not signed. They were not stipulated. They were not agreed to by Respondent Dillahunt. In fact, his lawyer specifically says it's subject to his approval. They're taken out of context. And her second letter, her second submission is actually part of where she rejects six prongs of their proposal. Clearly, there was no agreement. With respect to it taking time to get to here, as Your Honor says, well aware, having seen this file, it is a very contentious file, and Respondent Dillahunt was aware that they did not have an agreement as to the definition of marital portion and that there was going to be a fight, and he needed to save the time for this appeal, the money to have this appeal. Appellant specifically states that the Guggensburg was codified in 217, the new version of the 1408. That is incorrect. There is no double discount contained in the new formula, and furthermore, the Guggensburg court case did not set forth a formula. It simply determined that it was not a, it would not reopen a decree that was quite clear. She, in a number of different
situations. I've listened to you now go on about casting Guggensburg aside, double discounting. Why don't you tell me just straight out, why do you think what the trial court did here was appropriate?
Your Honor,
in
I think.
Deciding marital. Or the value of the marital portion?
I think the trial court looked at the fact that there was no specified hypothetical pay. She was presented with four formulas, one for 2017 that she decided didn't apply, two from the appellant Mitchell that she believed were unfair and unreasonable, as they both discounted the marital portion. One discounted it by reason of a double discount, and her other formula discounted it by reason of withholding disability pay that was is not allowed to be withheld under either version of the 1408. And so therefore, she applied the formula that was available to the court in 2008, specifically the Janssen formula, to account for the fact that a person who was a major at the time of the dissolution and a major at retirement, she accounted for the time and corrected for that. Thomas Dillahunt respectfully requests that the court affirm the trial court's decision because it acted in its discretion, and it also acted in applying the Janssen formula and also used its discretion to deny Appellant Mitchell her attorney's fees.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel for Appellant, rebuttal.
Christopher Zawiski for Appellant on rebuttal.
I'd like to have you give me bullet points as to why the Janssen formula was inappropriate here.
The Janssen formula is inappropriate for a number of reasons. One, it's a may, not a shall. The reason that it's not a...
It's a
may direction in the Janssen case, so you may use this case.
But give me the reason why you shouldn't.
Well, so, and I was going to go there. Why you shouldn't is one of the reasons it's a may as opposed to a shall direction is because you can find out the information that's necessary to make this division or apportionment now. In 2008, there's no evidence in front of the court other than the stipulated property settlement. In 2018, when we had a hearing, all of the information was available. We don't need to have a court in 2018 say, I have to go back and use the 2008 language, and I don't know any of these things. And
which so I'm things gonna, were unknown?
Well, the value is, in essence, the deal, because the agreement that we've reached...
Question. Which items going to the value were unknown?
The total amount that you would use, whether you use her pay in October 2016 or whether you find out what her pay was, the marital value of that pay in 2008 or 2000. The date of valuation is 2006. So that was the agreed upon. And that was where this appeal lies is, you know, if you start going into the non-marital portion of what she's earned, I don't believe that the Janssen formula is a double dip. There are two portions. The fraction represents her effort to get there. Again, as I pointed out in my first argument, the 20 years matters. Because if you don't get there, neither gets anything. The second portion of that non-marital calculation is what she earns at the time she retires versus the value of that military retirement pay at the date of valuation. Those are big numbers, and they're big numbers differences because she uses her pay for the last 3 years, from 2013 to 2016. The fraction doesn't take care of that problem. So the court, and again, was provided with this information, had the ability to go back. Now, on a quick note on that, the respondent argues that the value that was contained for her military retirement pay in her affidavit from Captain Crane is incorrect because it used a calculator that was later amended. I don't believe that's correct. I don't know that for certain, but the court found that under 10 U.S.C. 1408, there had been an amendment in 2016. The statute used to determine what her military retirement pay would have been in 2006 was 10 U.S.C. 1407. It's a different statute. And Captain Crane, who was a judge advocate, was hired by my client, and the affidavit was put into the court to find that information. So it was available to the court. So the question then becomes whether or not it's a double dip, and I don't believe that it is. I think that was the question from this court. You have to consider both the effort and the value of that effort, and you're not doing that if you don't double dip that. You use the value, the 50% marital value. I think just quickly on jurisdiction, there's two issues there. One, it goes to the standard of review of this court. We believe the standard of review in this court is both de novo, both as to the jurisdictional issue and as to the application of an apportionment formula, a Janssen formula. We believe that because those are case law issues. The jurisdiction issue that was raised here, yes, certainly my client participated in a divorce. Certainly my client did an answer and counter petition. But when we go back in a hearing in 2018, 10 years after the last property settlement, and there is a change made that includes non-marital earnings, she didn't agree to that. The court has thus divided that and added that into the property settlement. That changes the property settlement. Again, she didn't agree to that. Theoretically, you would have had to have a trial because at the time, we had a hearing, but at the time, if there had been a disagreement over, and they had a trial on other issues, the property issues were reserved and they came to an agreement, a stipulation. If there had been a trial because of a disagreement, the court would have had to make all of these findings. My client never agreed to a Janssen formula. The court applied it. We had all of the other information. I see my time has run out. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to both counsel for your argument, for your briefing, and your oral argument today. The matter is submitted, and we will issue our opinion within the statutory period. That is the last case scheduled for oral argument today, so we are in recess.
I'm slow, sorry.
Oh, no.
That's okay.